hackles raised, fixated on something across the room. There was Henry Lamb, the object of their attention, wrapped in a threadbare, checkered bathrobe, standing puffy-faced and startled in his bedroom doorway. And beyond the living room window, there was a perfectly nice summer morning pouring itself into the yard. Then all Edgar saw were chair legs and carpeting, because he was busy crashing to the floor. The dogs turned to look at him. Their shoulders drooped, and they began to sweep the air with their tails, gulping and panting in postures that said, possibly, they'd overreacted. Babu pressed his nose into Edgar's ear and slobbered to make amends. Henry slumped against the doorway. He attempted speech, but only a grunt came out. He shuffled past and into the kitchen. Coffee, if you want it, he croaked after a while. Edgar settled the dogs and knelt beside Tinder. The bandage was still on his foot, which surprised Edgar and worried him, too. Had Tinder been healthy, he would have chewed it off in the night. With his hand under Tinder's belly, Edgar coaxed the dog into taking a few steps. Good, Edgar thought, watching Tinder hold his foot aloft. At least he's not going to try walking on it. When Edgar came into the kitchen with the dogs, Henry was sitting at the table cradling a coffee cup. Edgar tipped open the door, and Essay and Babu began trotting around the weedy lawn between the house and barn. Edgar lay his hand on Tinder's back to guide him outside. The dog hobbled a few steps, urinated, and hobbled back. When he stepped back into the kitchen, the shower was running, and Henry's cup sat empty on the counter. Edgar poured himself some coffee. He found milk in the refrigerator and sugar in a little bowl by the window. The result was bitter and thick, but it shocked him awake. He sat on the stoop next to Tinder. Henry walked outside, car keys jingling in one hand, a lunch bucket in the other. "Had time to think about what you're going to do today," he said, easing down next to them. Edgar shook his head. This was a lie. What to do that day was exactly what he'd been worrying about, watching Tinder and trying to guess how long his bandage would last if they started walking, or if Tinder could walk at all. "How's your dog?" Edgar shrugged. "Right, probably too soon to tell." They sat watching Essay and Babu. "Okay, here's the thing," Henry said. "While I was showering, I tried to figure what most people would do in my place. Like, what's the ordinary way to handle this? Call the police, I suppose. Tell them I got a lost kid and three dogs on my hands. That's my first instinct, so I don't trust it. It doesn't show much imagination, you know?" Edgar nodded. "So I'm not going to do that. I mean, I don't think I'll do that." Henry turned to give Edgar a look, a meaningful look, though Edgar couldn't be sure exactly what its meaning was. It struck him again how there was something likable about the man's defeatist sincerity. Henry Lamb saw the world as filled with roadblocks and difficulties, or so it seemed. He conveyed somehow the impression that no bad news would surprise him, that every situation was a double bind waiting to be discovered. "Look," Henry said, "I'm telling you right now, I'm not trustworthy. I was once, but not anymore. No promises. Nowadays, I'm reckless and unpredictable." He said this without a hint of irony in his voice. Edgar blinked. "I'm going to leave the house unlocked. You can stay if you want. Give your dog's foot time to heal." Edgar nodded his head. They sat on the edge of the stoop and looked at the sunflowers. It was very early in the morning, and the sun was just preparing to slip over the horizon, but already their enormous, dished heads were tipped eastward. "I don't suppose you're planning to rob me blind?" Edgar shook his head. "Well, what else could you say? But if I kick you out and lock the door, you could just put a rock through the window, so what good would that do? I've either got to trust you or call the police and take most of the day off to deal with that." He pushed himself to his feet with a grunt and walked to his car. "Could be, I'm stupid." Just in case, I'll tell you right now, there's hardly any money in there, and nothing much valuable you could carry on foot. No jewelry, nothing like that. And no guns. Kitchen's stocked up, though. I just went shopping yesterday. Eat anything you like. You look like you're starving. Stay out of my bedroom. Don't mess with this car. He gestured to the wreck on blocks. And the TV's busted. Anything else you want to know? No. Henry backed his sedan around. As he pulled up to the house, he leaned over and rolled down the passenger side window. If you do leave, he said, lock the door. But don't, otherwise, unless you want to wait outside until I come back. The only other set of keys is in my desk at work. He idled down the driveway, and then there was the sound of tires on blacktop fading in the direction of Loot. Edgar stayed on the stoop, sipping Henry Lamb's noxious coffee. The house sat in a pocket of morning shadow behind the sunflower field. The cloudless sky was shot with white rays, as if someone had thrown powdered sugar into the air. A faint turpentine odor drifted off the sunflowers. Essay and Babu were snooping along the perimeter of the barn. When Tinder whined, Edgar signed a release, and the dog hopped forward. He stopped and solemnly nosed his bandaged foot, then persevered until he reached the other dogs, tapping his foot lightly on the ground as he hitched along. The dogs sniffed one another. Then Tinder limped back to the stoop and lay down, sighing. Watching the dog move told Edgar it would be 2 weeks, two, three even, before they could travel. Assuming Tinder's paw didn't get infected, and he hadn't cut a tendon or ligament so vital he would, as Henry had so delicately suggested, be crippled. The irony was that if any of the dogs was going to hurt himself through foolish exploration, it should have been Essay, not Tinder. Tinder had just been unlucky, and hunting frogs, no less, always harmless in the past. So did they have any choice but to accept Henry's offer? The man didn't seem to know the first thing about dogs. Edgar doubted Henry had any idea how long Tinder's convalescence would last, or what it took to feed 300 pounds of hungry dog every day. Edgar had no money to pay for food. Without a lake nearby and no cabins to pilfer, fishing and burglary weren't options. Plus, to top it all off, Henry was such a strange character. His warning about not being trustworthy. People didn't say things like that. At the same time, Henry clearly liked them. He'd even glimpsed the man smiling after the morning's ruckus. Or maybe that had just been his reaction to the sight of Edgar toppling to the floor. But even if Henry had been sincere in his offer, on his drive to work, wherever that was, he could decide he'd made a mistake. What was he doing turning his house over to a stranger? The next thing Edgar would know, a squad car would be pulling into the yard. After weeks in Shawamigan Woods, Edgar felt sure that, able-bodied, they could evade any single pursuer. But with Tinder lame and so many open fields around, there would be no ducking anyone. Not unless they had a long, long head start. Of course, that was an option. They could leave right that moment. Tinder's wound would slow them down, but it wouldn't stop them. He'd carried Tinder a mile the night before. True, his back was still aching like the blazes, but he could do it again if he had to. So what if they could only go a mile a day? A mile up the track from Henry's house was as good as the next county, for all anyone knew. And once they got to a lake, they could lay up for a long time. Until now, they depended on no one. It was the one plan he knew worked. He clapped Essay and Babu back and led them all into the house. He started the water running in the shower and stripped. As the small mirror over the sink fogged, he looked at himself. Hawk thin, face dotted with mosquito bites, hair bleached brown and hanging over his blue eyes. The weeks they'd spent fending for themselves had burned away the softness in him. And he looked like a sighthound, edgy and strung up tight. Also, he was filthy. The dirt on his sunburnt neck stopped somewhere around his shoulders. He fiddled with the temperature of the water, then stepped into the shower and pulled the white plastic curtain and lathered up. He let the steaming water course over his body. Despite his daily doses of off, every inch of his skin seemed to have been dinner for some horsefly, chigger, or mosquito. When the hot water was drained, he pushed back the curtain. Essay and Babu stood peering quizzically through the doorway. He smiled and grabbed a towel and brandished it like a toreador. After he dressed, he filled the bowl with Wheaties, milk, and honey, and carried it with him as he looked around the house. The hallway was covered with pictures. An elderly couple posed before a studio backdrop. Henry's parents, he guessed. Some pajamaed children holding up toys beside a glittering Christmas tree. A younger Henry in the lobby of a large building, next to his parents, a doubtful expression on his face. On the end table, he noticed a portrait of a cherubic woman, signed in a loopy swirl, Love Belva. The television remained dark when Edgar switched it on, but there was a record player in working order. On the bookshelves, he found a stack of car repair manuals and some Bell System handbooks. It looked like Henry worked for the telephone company. The bedroom door was closed. He considered opening it, but everything in the house was somehow of a piece, and he could easily imagine the plain bed, the linens rumpled but not too rumpled, the checkered bathrobe flung down, the dresser, the closet, more family pictures on the wall. Staying out of there was the only thing Henry had asked. He hadn't even asked them not to rob him, which they had already done, gluttonously and without a shred of remorse. Edgar walked back to the kitchen and rummaged. He poured 4 cans of beef stew into one bowl for Essay and Babu, and 2 cans of turkey and dumplings into another for Tinder, and set the bowls out. While they ate, he peeled the band-aid off his thumb and inspected his wound. The cut was deep and ugly, but it was clean. He began rolling the sock off Tinder's foot. His mind's eye conjured the sight of Tinder thrashing on his back, spear of glass glinting both above and below. He hoped his imagination had made Tinder's injury worse than it was, that it might look benign by the light of day. It didn't. A brown stain had formed on the dressings. Tinder licked and pulled at the bandage as Edgar unwound it. With difficulty, he rolled the dog onto his side and turned his foot upward. The pad had swollen to twice its normal size. He forced himself to part the wound and was rewarded with a spine-tingling view of pink and gray meat and a glimpse of a white cord contracting. Then he had to stop, partly because his head was swimming, and partly because Tinder yelped and yanked his foot away, licking it with long, slow swipes and looking reproachfully at Edgar. The enamel washpan sat on the counter. He filled it with warm water and metered out 4 drops of dish soap. Tinder threatened to revolt when Edgar set it on the floor. Edgar wrapped his hand around Tinder's muzzle and looked him in the eye. "Get used to it," he signed. "We're going to do a lot of this." From their vantage point in the field, Edgar watched Henry's car stop beside the mailbox, then roll along the driveway. It was late afternoon, and he and the dogs had retreated to the spot where they'd slept away the previous afternoon, the best compromise he could think of between staying and going. Although Tinder couldn't put the slightest weight on his foot, when Edgar had tried to carry him, he'd thrashed so mightily, Edgar had set him down at once, afraid he might jump and compound his injury. Reluctantly, he'd let the dog pick his way along the fence line, taking 30 minutes to complete the journey. But once they were settled, Edgar felt much better. He'd taken a chance that morning and downstayed the dogs in the house and run up the tracks to fetch the Zebco and the satchel from the railroad embankment. Now the fishing equipment was hidden amidst the sunflowers. In a few seconds, they could all be hidden amidst the sunflowers, even Tinder. Down below, Henry stepped out of his sedan, a bag of groceries under his arm and lunchbox in hand. He called out and opened the back door, then disappeared inside. They had left the house empty and unlocked, without even a note of thanks. It was rude, but he couldn't leave evidence that he and the dogs had been there, in case Henry arrived accompanied by, well, who knew who might tag along, or follow a few minutes behind. Henry returned to the stoop, beer in hand. He looked around the yard. Edgar ducked, and when he raised his head again, Henry stood on the road, staring along the blacktop and shaking his head. Then he dragged a round-bellied barbecue grill from the barn to the stoop. He produced a bag of briquettes and a can of lighter fluid, and soon flames jumped out of the black hemisphere and heat waves shimmered above. In short order, Henry carried out two kitchen chairs and a card table, which he unfolded on the lawn. He set plates on each side of the table and populated the center with a bag of thick brown rolls, bottles of ketchup and mustard, and a dish of something that was either potato or macaroni salad. He used a drinking glass as a weight over a small sheaf of paper, and he dropped a pair of yellow pencils into it. Then he unwrapped a package of what could only be fresh bratwurst, and arranged them on the grill, and opened a can of baked beans and let it heat beside the brats. When everything was cooking to his satisfaction and a column of smoke rose off the grill, Henry sat in one of the chairs and unfolded a newspaper. Watching it all made Edgar smile. If they had been spotted, Henry could have just shouted to them without going through this performance. Probably, though, Henry had no idea whether they were nearby, much less watching. It was an interesting act of faith from a man who declared himself reckless and unpredictable. If anything, Henry struck Edgar as wildly dependable. Making dinner and acting out this invitation for guests he couldn't even be sure existed. And though he hated to admit it, Henry's plan was working. After the previous day's orgiastic meal, Edgar had thought he wouldn't eat for a week. But now his mouth was watering. Every time he looked, something new had appeared on the table. Pickles, root beer, something wrapped in butcher paper, what looked like lemon meringue pie. Yet they couldn't walk into that yard. Short of waiting, there was no way to be positive the man hadn't told the sheriff's department to stop by around, say, 9 o'clock, when he could be sure the kid would be sitting in his house. When the bratwurst finished cooking, Henry juggled the hot can of beans with an oven mitt and dumped them into a bowl. He stacked the sausages on a plate and set the plate on the card table and casually helped himself, scooping out a mound of potato salad and a dollop of baked beans. Then he quartered the newspaper in a flapping commotion and plucked a pencil from the empty glass across the table and began to work the crossword. Maybe it was Edgar's imagination, but he thought he could smell the spicy aroma of cooked bratwurst all the way up in the field. Babu certainly could. He sidled up to Edgar and panted anxiously in his ear. Edgar smoothed his hand absently along the dog's top line. A half dark had fallen. A handful of stars had emerged in the clear azure sky. He stood and clapped quietly to bring Essay forward. When she didn't appear at his side, he suddenly understood that Babu hadn't been panting over food. He whirled and clapped more loudly. When he turned back, Essay was already trotting into the circle of the porch light, her gait jaunty, her tail slashing prettily through the air, swinging her front legs in wide circles as she ran, as if greeting a long-lost friend. Henry set down his newspaper. Essay finished before him in a perfect sit, perhaps 3 inches away.
"Hello, you," Henry said, leaning back.
His voice carried up the slope in the still evening air. Even from that distance, Edgar could see Essay giving Henry the moocher's eye, sitting up straight, perking her ears, swishing her tail. Babu, standing beside Edgar, began to whine and stomp. "Sit," Edgar signed. With a bitter groan, Babu sat, then sidled to his left for a better view.
Then Tinder hobbled forward. The two of them sat scenting the air, heads bobbing and tilting like marionettes whenever Henry spoke. There's no use now, Edgar thought. He walked to Tinder and knelt. You're not running down there on that foot, he signed. He got the dog up and put his arms underneath him and looked him in the eye. When they understood each other, he released Babu, then put one arm under Tinder's belly and the other under his chest and stood. Tinder was heavy, but his weight was becoming familiar, and Edgar took slow, careful steps down the hill. Henry took a swallow of beer and watched them approach. In the last 50 feet, Babu discarded any shred of reserve and bolted forward, skidding into a sit beside Esse. The two dogs looked back and forth between Edgar and Henry. Then Esse trotted back to meet Edgar and Tinder, oblivious to the look Edgar gave her, and tossing her head, as if escorting them to a fete, all of it her idea. Tinder had been patient on the walk down, but now he began to wriggle in Edgar's arms. Edgar lowered him to the ground. The dog nuzzled Esse, then hopped across the grass. In a moment, Henry was ringed by dogs. Given all his preparations, Edgar expected Henry to issue a cheerful invitation. But he didn't know Henry very well yet. I thought you'd run off, Henry grunted, looking over the dogs' heads at him. He gestured toward the food. Have a brat. I burned them pretty bad, but I guess they're better than nothing. After Edgar stuffed a brat into a bun and scooped potato salad onto his plate, Henry gestured toward the white parcel on the table. Edgar unwrapped it to find 3 large soup bones with shreds of raw red meat attached and plenty of marrow. "Guy at the meat locker told me those were good ones for dogs," he said. Edgar nodded. He offered the package to Henry so that he could hand them out, but Henry shook his head. Thanks anyway, but I was planning on using all my fingers tomorrow, he said. By that time, the dogs had scented the bones and were waiting when Edgar crouched beside his chair. They trotted off to grind their teeth against the shanks and imagine, with unfocused gazes, the animal from which the bones had come. Then, as if Edgar's arrival weren't of the least interest, Henry returned to his crossword puzzle. Occasionally, he sat back and tapped his pencil and looked into the dark, as lost in thought as the dogs. Finally, he set the pencil down and opened a fresh beer. Darn it, he said. I need a 12-letter word meaning butterfly-like. Starts with L. Edgar looked at Henry. He picked up a pencil and wrote Lepidopteral and pushed the paper across the table. Henry turned back to the crossword. Nice, he said. What can you get for a, 6-letter word for echo? Ends with RB. Edgar thought for a moment, and beneath his previous entry wrote, reverb. Yep, that works again, Henry said. Aha, lentil, he cried, and filled in another row. One left. 8-letter word for formed of fire or light. Starts with E, ends with L. Edgar shook his head. All right, forget it. I got close. Thanks for the help. He set the paper down, divided the pie into 6 slices, passed a plated slice to Edgar, then took one of his own. He pointed his fork at Tinder, who busily gnawed his soup bone. How's that guy's foot? He asked. Bad. Edgar wrote. Swollen. His main problem's going to be infection. You know that, right? Yes. You wash it out again today? He held up 4 fingers. Henry nodded. I'm not telling you anything you don't know, am I? Edgar shrugged, not wanting to seem ungrateful. Henry ate a forkful of pie and looked at him. I don't mean to pry, he said, but it'd make things a lot easier if you told me your name. Edgar sat mortified while Henry finished his pie. In all his thinking and planning throughout the day, this was one detail that hadn't crossed his mind.
He couldn't simply write his real name down. After years of naming pups, he thought, it ought to be simple to come up with a name for himself. But he didn't have days or weeks to think this over. He tried to cover his confusion by helping himself to a second slice of pie. He looked at the dogs. Then an idea came to him. He scribbled on the paper and pushed it over to Henry.
Nathu? Henry said doubtfully. You don't look much like a Nathu. Is that Indian or what?
Call me Nat, Edgar wrote. Henry looked at him.
What do you call your dogs?
The words Essay, Babu, and Tinder appeared on the page. Henry repeated them, pointing to each of the dogs in turn.
Yes.
Then, to get Henry off the subject of names, Edgar decided it was time to clean Tinder's foot once more. He filled the enamel pan with soapy water and carried it out to Tinder.
This going to take as long as it did last night? Henry asked.
Edgar nodded.
Then I'm turning in. Make yourself comfortable when you're done.
Henry gathered up the remains of dinner, as well as the card table and chairs. By the time Edgar rewrapped Tinder's foot, Henry had retired to his bedroom. Edgar led the dogs inside and downed them on the rug in the living room. He hoped the previous night had been a fluke, but as soon as he stretched out on the sofa, it became clear he'd lost the ability to sleep on upholstered furniture. This had not previously seemed to be a skill. Just weeks before, he had regularly slept in a bed, under sheets and blankets, with a roof overhead and a single small window through which to view the night. Now his body insisted he was in a chamber. The night sounds came through the half-open window as if down a long pipe. The pliability of the sofa cushions felt all wrong, far more comfortable than twigs gouging his side and bugs biting. But in the forest, he and the dogs had slept touching one another. If any of them moved, the others knew it at once. Now he was forced to reach down to touch the dogs at all, and even then it was only with his fingertips. And anyone could walk up to the window before he knew it. Finally, he stood, blanket wrapped around him, and led the dogs through the kitchen and onto the flat expanse of the stoop. They bedded down in a tangle of canine and human limbs, with the house comfortably at their flanks, eight eyes and eight ears facing into the night. One by one, the dogs exhaled deep sighs. Overhead, cool white stars arced in the black sky. The moon and the thin corona around the moon shone. It looked to him empyreal, formed of light or fire, the word that would have completed the crossword puzzle. Why hadn't he wanted to tell Henry? He pondered that question, while the night sounds eddied around them. But before an answer came, he'd fallen asleep.
Ordinary. Birdsong. Scent of percolating coffee.
Henry pushed open the screen door and looked at Edgar and the dogs lying curled and overlapped and shook his head as if they were the most pitiful sight he'd ever seen. Babu was the first to rise, splaying his front feet and ambling, sleep-drunk, to Henry. Edgar tightened his grip on Tinder and Essay, but they were awake and panting. Water rang through the pipes in the house, and the shower hissed. Edgar pushed himself up and walked into the kitchen and poured himself a cup of coffee and brought it back out on the stoop. Essay remembered his soup bone, which reminded the other dogs, and the sky brightened to the sound of three sets of teeth scraping bone. They barely looked up when Henry walked out, lunch bucket in hand. He dropped a pair of canvas work gloves onto the porch beside Edgar.
Follow me, Henry said.
He walked to the shed and jiggled a bent bolt out of a flap latch and threw open the doors.
Here's the deal. I want to park that car,
he gestured at the rusting monolith on the cinder blocks, in this shed. Viewed from the outside, Henry's shed was unremarkable, if slightly ramshackle.
It measured maybe 15 feet wide and twice that deep. A windowless little structure with a peaked roof and sun-blasted white paint. But inside lay a junkyard in miniature. It took Edgar a moment before he could make his eyes settle on any one thing. The walls were encrusted with hubcaps, spools of wire, license plates, ancient tire irons, handsaws, rakes, hoes, scythes, circular saw blades, and a menagerie of ancient iron tools, rusted and strange. Coils of chain link lay heaped around the perimeter like petrified snakes. A length of rain gutter crumpled and folded. An unframed mirror footed by dusty, cracked sheets of plate glass. There was a stack of rusty buckets overflowing with doodads and piece parts. Off to one side, a crumbling pyramid of red bricks, topped by a thick rope, shedding fibrous creepers. Plywood sheets, delaminated like picture books, fished out of a puddle. There were mounds of tires, stacks of newspaper oatmealing in place, wash pans haphazardly stacked, their enamel crazed like desert mud. A squat brown anvil. Toward the back, a cylindrical wringer washer lurked, and what looked to be either a fire hydrant or part of a truck transmission. And all that was around the edges. At the center stood, or stooped, rather, an ancient hay wagon. It gave the impression of a broken-backed animal driven to the ground by its burden. Three of its wheels had sprung out to the sides in expressions of shock and exasperation. Its front axle had buckled, tilting the fourth wheel inward, and the whole rotted platform melted diagonally back to front beneath a mountain of timber, shingles, door frames, rolls of barbed wire, and rust-red stanchions. Had the wagon still been on its wheels, the debris wouldn't have cleared the lintel.
"You see my problem?" Henry said. Edgar nodded. He looked at the ruined car on its blocks. It definitely belonged in the shed, he thought. Then Henry laid out his plan. What to tackle first. What he wanted Edgar to avoid until both of them were there. It took him a long time to explain. There was a lot to do, and he instructed Edgar in detail. "Carhartt's in the closet when you get to the pokey stuff," he said, gesturing toward a nest of barbed wire. Then he took Edgar to the barn and showed him where he could find wire cutters and a wheelbarrow. When they walked back to the house, Edgar scribbled out a request for bandages, and Henry produced an old white bedsheet. They made a list of things he needed from town, and then Henry drove off. Babu and Esse had followed them to the shed and now stood peering into the kitchen through the screen door. Tinder had joined them, standing on three legs. He met Edgar's gaze with a glint of defiance. Unless Edgar wanted to hold him down, his look said, he was going to start moving. "First we clean that foot," Edgar signed. Tinder's wound oozed a gray-green pus, odorless but nonetheless frightening. The sight made beads of sweat wick into the hair all over Edgar's scalp. He pressed the back of his hand to the injured pad. It wasn't overly hot. He began to work it in the water too roughly, and Tinder yelped and jerked his paw away. "I'm sorry," Edgar signed, "but we can't stop yet." He sat with his hand out. In time, Tinder offered Edgar his dripping paw, and the next time he went slower. Afterward, he washed the old bandages in the sink and strung them up to dry on the clothesline. Tinder began to chew the new dressings. "Stop it," Edgar signed. He put the soup bone in front of Tinder and returned to the clothesline. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Tinder return to his bandages. He walked back and stopped him again. "We can just do this all day if you want," he signed. He counted back in his mind. 3 days since he and the dogs had been through drills. He lined them up in the grass behind the shed. They worked through recalls and come-fors in the morning sun, then fetches, stays, and guarding. It reminded them all of home, he supposed,
But back then they'd only been going through motions, answering classroom questions upon which nothing depended. Chasing, sitting still, scenting targets. Now the same acts drew up the ties between them, put them back together, as though shaping the world from scratch. As they worked, they put the sky in place above, the trees and the ground. They invented color and air and scent and gravity, laughter and sadness. They discovered truth and lies and mock lies. Even then, Essay played the oldest joke there was to play, returning a stick past him as if he were invisible, cantering sideways, tossing it about in her mouth as if to ask, "It's all play, really, isn't it? What else matters when there's this to do?" The first part of Henry's plan was simple. Pull everything onto the dirt and grass and sort it into three piles. Junk to burn, junk to haul away, and junk to save. The old lumber would be burned, along with the magazines and papers. The old chair and the stanchions would be hauled away. The category of junk to be saved was largely theoretical, Henry had said. Also, while Henry wasn't aware of anything that called the shed home, it was hard not to imagine a rat nesting inside somewhere. Edgar picked out a whacking stick, and before he moved anything big, he wailed on it. A lone garter snake had slithered from behind the plywood, but so far, that was it. In short order, he had the stanchions stacked haphazardly on the gravel, and a mound of rubbish near the burning barrel. One after another, the dogs trotted over to scent what Edgar had pulled out. Babu and Essay marked the old car seat. When Tinder tried, it turned into a balancing problem, since he only had three good legs. Edgar made as if to stop them, then wondered what the point would be. At noon, he doled out scraps to the dogs and soaked Tinder's foot again, rewrapping it with dry bandages from the clothesline. There was the sound of a car passing along the road. Out of habit, he glanced up to locate the dogs, but there was no real cause for concern. Babu and Tinder were sleeping in the shade. Essay had selected a spot in the sun from which she could follow his progress. All of them were concealed behind a house. He briefly reconsidered starting down the railroad tracks, then rejected the idea again. Besides the difficulty of traveling with Tinder and the hydrogen peroxide and other supplies that Henry would be bringing back that evening, Edgar had made a deal with Henry, and he already felt more than a twinge of guilt over having burglarized the man. He didn't want to renege. Cleaning out his shed seemed like a small repayment. Edgar walked back to the shed, letting his mind wander as he worked. Each time he salvaged something interesting, a puckered, moldy globe, or an apple masher with a broken wooden handle, he turned it over in his hands, brushing away the dirt and dust and cobwebs. He wondered about whoever had built the place. How many summers had he clamped that contraption to his kitchen table and worked the now cracked handle, squashing apple after apple, levering the burst pulp out of the cylinder, straining the juice through cheesecloth. Did the house smell like cider the next morning? Did hornets collect on the window screen as he worked? He couldn't have pinpointed when, exactly, he knew he wasn't alone. He'd been working slowly, passing in and out of reverie, when his neck hairs began to prickle, as if a rivulet of sweat had been reduced there to salt by the wind, a sensation that at first meant nothing to him. The second time it happened, he glimpsed from the corner of his eye a figure standing in the depths of the shed, and he stumbled backward into the sunshine and stared into the gray morass of shadow. He looked at the dog sprawled about the yard. He walked around the shed, keeping a good distance away from it. There were no windows to look through, and all he could do was trace the runs of clapboard with their paint peeling off like thin, irregular patches of birch bark. When he'd come full circle, he stood outside the doorway and shielded his eyes and peered inside. He could see the outline of the old wagon and the rubbish mounded over it, but that was all. He tipped his whacking stick into the corner just inside the door, and he leaned in and snatched it and rapped the wooden doorframe. After a while, he walked back inside and beat the pile of stanchions until a cloud of orange rust dust filled the shed. All else lay inert. He stood nodding to himself. When he turned, the dogs were lined up in the doorway, looking at him.
"Good idea," he signed. "Down. Watch me."
After the dogs were settled, he went cautiously back to work. The next time he felt the prickle along the back of his neck, he forced himself to look at the dogs first. Only Babu was still awake, lying panting and unalarmed in the sun. Edgar let his gaze drift toward the rear of the shed. The figure, seen from the corner of his eye, was there. Yet when he turned to face it squarely, it was not. He compiled an impression, bit by bit. A slump-shouldered old fellow with a farmer's thick arms and a broad belly. He wore blue jeans and a grease-stained T-shirt, and a feed-store cap rested high on his graying head of hair. When the man finally spoke, his voice was low, almost a whisper, and he pronounced words with an accent Edgar recognized from many hours spent listening to old farmers at the feed store, who said "duh" for "the" and "dare" for "there."
"It was the wife," the man said. "Nothing could go to waste. Everything had to be saved."
Edgar, wary of what had happened the last time he looked, forced himself to concentrate on wrenching a pair of car wheels free.
"She wanted to keep every goddarn thing in case we needed it for parts," the man said. "I could have used this shed for better, I'll tell you that. I ended up having to put all the real machinery over to the neighbors."
Edgar stacked the wheels one on top of the other and knelt and began sorting through some smaller items to keep his eyes on his hands.
"Take that coal furnace there."
Edgar ventured a glance toward a hulking metal form behind the wagon. He didn't dare examine it too closely, for he could feel his gaze drawn toward the old farmer. But it certainly looked like it had once been a furnace. Until that moment, he'd only noticed something round and metal and riveted.
"We put that into the basement before we even laid the first floorboards. God, it was big. Took three of us all morning. Rain, cats and dogs the whole time. That wasn't so bad, though. Getting it out was lots worse. Had to bust it into pieces with a sledgehammer. 'Make sure and save that,' she says. 'You never know.'"
From the corner of his eye, Edgar saw the man shake his head.
"I can't tell you how many ton of coal I shoveled into that thing. Got so I was pretty fond of it. Called it Carl. Gotta go stoke Carl, I'd say, when it got cold. Or Carl's gonna have a hell of a time tonight when a blizzard come through."
"How long did you live here?"
Edgar signed. But he let himself look, and once again there was no one there. He carried a steering wheel out to the yard and devoted himself to his work until his neck hairs stood again.
37 years, the man said. "About 15 years in, nothing fit in the shed no more, so she had me haul some away. She wrung her hands the whole time. Yeah, I shouldn't be so hard on her. She was a sweet woman, and she loved our kids like crazy. After she died, I found a shoebox full of wire twists from bread bags. Thousands of them. Probably every one we ever brought into the house. What was she thinking we would use them for?"
Edgar didn't try to respond. He averted his eyes and selected an old crate filled with broken canning jars to carry to the discard pile. Then he pulled a wire cutter from his back pocket and began cutting a snarl of barbed wire and fence posts, bending lengths of wire straight and tossing them into a pile like the stems of iron roses.
"When she died," the old farmer continued, I thought, now I can clean that shed. I come outside, opened the doors, and thought, nope, can't do it. 37 years of putting in, I can't start taking out now. Would have been like burying her twice. So I sold it all and moved to town. When we had the auction, I told people they could have everything in the shed for $20 if they emptied it out. Not one person took me up on it.
Then, despite Edgar's best efforts, his glance slipped toward the man again, and he was gone. Edgar worked and waited. The afternoon passed. Then Henry arrived home, bringing the dog food and other supplies Edgar had requested, and several cans of paint and brushes. He'd brought something else, too, phonograph records, which he made a point of taking out of the car immediately so they wouldn't melt in the hot sun. The dogs sallied excitedly around the yard, letting out creaking yawns to calm themselves until Henry reemerged from the house. Edgar stayed Tinder, who keened quietly. The other two accosted Henry. The man hadn't been around many dogs, that much was obvious. He stood watching, arms in the air like someone wading in a pool. When Babu sat in front of him, rather than scratching behind the dog's ear or stroking his ruff, to everyone's surprise, Henry gripped him by the muzzle and shook it like a hand. The gesture was well meant, and possibly Henry even thought the dog liked it, but Babu lowered his head tolerantly and cast a sidelong glance Edgar's way. Essay, having witnessed Babu's fate, danced skittishly away when her turn came. Finally, Henry walked over and patted Tinder's head open-handedly, as if tamping down a stubborn cowlick. He sized up the debris piles, which had grown impressively over the course of the day, and walked to the shed and looked in.
"Jesus," Henry said, "there's just as much here as when you started."
This was Edgar's sentiment exactly, and he was relieved to hear Henry confirm it. He started to put the work gloves back on, but Henry interrupted him.
"That's enough for one day," he said. "If you keep at it any longer, I'll feel obligated to help."
Edgar pulled the shed doors closed and dropped the bent bolt back into the rusty latch. They walked together to Henry's car. Henry fished two sweating six-packs from the floor of the passenger side. In the back seat lay a 40-pound sack of dog food. Edgar slung it over his shoulder and carried it to the stoop, and he sat and fed the dogs straight from the bag, cupping the kibble in his hands. That night it was a working man's dinner. Henry sat at the kitchen table and read the newspaper and ate reheated brats and potato salad. He motioned for Edgar to help himself and eyed the dogs as though expecting them to lunge for the food. He started to ask Edgar to put them outside, then seemed to reconsider. Instead, he folded the paper into quarters and pored over the crossword, tapping his pencil on the table and picking off the easy clues. Then he said, "Oh," and walked into the living room. There was a warm pop from the phonograph speakers. Piano music began to drift through the house. "They called this one the Goldberg Variation," he said when he returned. He was holding a battered album cover in one hand. He looked at it again and, with self-conscious precision, corrected himself. "Variations." He took up the crossword puzzle again, shifting and fidgeting and touching his forehead as if perturbed by the sound of the piano. He emptied his glass of beer and leaned over to the refrigerator and extracted another, pouring it down the inside curve of the glass while streamers of bubbles tumbled upward.
"Hey, read something, would you?" he said. "When you just sit there, it makes it hard to concentrate."
He didn't sound angry, just a little dejected.
"There's magazines and books in the living room."
Edgar took the dogs outside and began grooming them using the pin brush Henry had bought. It was a cheap plastic brush, but it was better than he could do with his fingers, which were all he'd had to work with for weeks. The dogs' undercoats were terribly matted.
twilight had ended, but the kitchen window cast enough light. He worked Essay's tail until she grew impatient, then moved to Tinder and Babu, and then back to Essay. The piano music drifted out the screen door. When it stopped, scratchily, he listened to Henry's footsteps pass through the living room. In a minute, a new melody began. Henry walked out onto the porch, paper and pencil in one hand, beer glass in the other, and sat with his back against the white clapboards. Babu walked over to him. Henry tentatively pressed his fingers into the fur under Babu's jaw, attempting to scratch without getting slobber on his fingers. Babu endured it for a moment, then turned his head so that Henry's hand slid behind his ear and began to push back against Henry's fingers.
"Nat," Henry said, "what's a 10-letter word for augments vision? Starts and ends with S."
He slid the paper over to Edgar.
23 down.
Edgar glanced at the crossword puzzle and set down the brush and penciled in spectacles and pushed the paper back.
"Right," Henry said. "Should have got that."
He held his beer up to the porch light and looked through it.
"Spectacles," he repeated pensively, as if the idea of spectacles had just occurred to him.
He tipped his head back against the house. When he stopped scratching Babu, the dog nosed Henry's hand and laid a paw on his leg.
"Watch it," Edgar signed at him.
Babu withdrew his foot.
"You know," Henry said, "it's probably hard to tell, but I've never had a dog. Not even when I was a kid. Lots of cats. 3-4 at a time. My best friend in elementary school had a little spotted dog named Bouncer. Maybe a 20-pounder or so. Pretty smart. He could balance stuff on his nose. He'd follow us everywhere. But these dogs, something else. I mean, the way they look at you and all."
They sat in silence for a while. The light from the kitchen was skewed across the boards of the stoop.
"You had them all their lives?"
"Yes."
"You trained them?"
"Yes."
"How's that one, Tinder? How's Tinder's foot?"
Edgar was working the myriad tangles in Essay's tail, and she wasn't enjoying it. When he set the brush down and released her, she leapt and circled, examining her priceless appendage, then bounded over to Henry and Babu and nosed them both. Edgar joined them. He unwrapped Tinder's bandage and held his paw up to the light. Henry scooted over.
"Oof," he said. "I thought I just imagined that from the other night."
Edgar fetched the rags and the pan and a bottle of hydrogen peroxide.
"That's the biggest bottle I could find. You can probably stretch it if you soak a rag and dab," Henry said.
Edgar nodded. He reached over to the paper.
"Why did you plant sunflowers?"
he wrote in the margin. He sopped up the hydrogen peroxide, as Henry suggested. The edges of Tinder's wound were red and weeping, and the hydrogen peroxide sizzled under the cloth.
"Aha, well, interesting question," Henry said.
He sat and looked out at the field.
"Call it an experiment. Usually I plant corn, but I wanted to do something different this year, something out of the ordinary. So I came up with this idea. Further south, sunflower isn't so uncommon, you know, but you don't see it here much."
When Tinder's foot was as clean as he could get it, Edgar retrieved the tattered bandages from the clothesline.
"Does it pay better than corn?" he wrote.
"Not really," Henry said. "But I don't care. 50 cents a pound for the seed. I could make more money with corn, but not so much more." He looked at the field and frowned.
"I'm not sure how you harvest it, though. It'll take forever to do it by hand. The man who harvested the corn last year thought he could get a special attachment for his combine. Then again, I might just let them sit there if they look nice. It all depends. Of course, nothing's more depressing than a field full of dead sunflowers."
He drank his beer and looked at the stars. You haven't been able to talk for a long time, huh? With the hand signs and everything?
Edgar shook his head.
Was there an accident or something? If you don't mind me asking, I mean. I was born this way, he wrote. The doctors don't know why.
Then he shrugged and wrote,
Thank you for buying dog food.
Henry looked at the piles of debris. What a god-awful mess, he said. He turned his gaze to the car on blocks.
I appreciate the help. I need to get that heap out of the rain before it rusts to pieces. I ought to just sell it, you know.
He stared at the car and produced another bottle of beer from somewhere.
I just can't part with it, he said.
Edgar nodded. He slipped a fresh sock onto Tinder's foot and tied it up again, using his forefinger to warn the dog from chewing. Tinder broke into a pant, as if amazed Edgar had read his mind.
Nat, Henry said, have you ever been called ordinary?
Edgar looked at him.
You know, ordinary. Just ordinary. I bet no one has ever accused you of that.
No, Edgar looked at him. Not that I can remember.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. Running around with trained circus dogs or whatever? Jesus. Want to know something ridiculous? I have. By my own fiancé. Ex-fiancé, I mean. We were going to get married in March, and then, from out of nowhere, she called it off. Said she loved me, even. But she'd decided I was too ordinary, and that over the years it would destroy our marriage.
Ordinary looking, or what? I said.
No, just all around ordinary, she said. Ordinary in the way you do things. Ordinary in what you see and think and say. Just ordinary.
Once she got that idea in her head, she said, she couldn't shake it. Every time she looked at me, she felt love, and she felt ordinariness at the same time. He took a big swallow of beer.
I ask you, does that make sense?
Edgar shook his head. The fact was, it didn't make sense to him. He loved ordinary things, ordinary days, ordinary work. Even as Henry spoke, he felt a pang over the routine of the kennel. And if that couldn't be called ordinary, what could? Besides, while Henry didn't strike him as being highly unusual, he didn't see any reason that should be an offense. Or for that matter, what it would even mean to be called ordinary.
Darn right it doesn't. Henry declared in a sudden burst of indignation.
Then he wilted.
She had a point, though. What exactly have I done out of the ordinary? Every day I go down to the central office, and at the end of every day I come home. I have a house like everyone else. I plant a crop in a field and harvest it every fall. I have a car on blocks that I tinker with. I like to fish. What isn't ordinary about that?
Is she ordinary? Edgar wrote.
Henry looked at Edgar as if he hadn't considered the question before. Well, I guess you might not pick Belva out of a crowd walking down the street, but she's pretty unusual once you get to know her. For instance, one of her eyes is blue, the other is brown, so that puts her out of the ordinary right there. Also, she's an atheist. She says if there was a God, both her eyes would be the same color. Myself, I believe in God, but I just don't want to lose an entire morning at church. I figure God doesn't care whether you worship in the church or on your drive to work.
Belva says that doesn't count as being either an atheist or a believer. That's just lazy.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Wouldn't surprise me, Henry said, as if this confirmed his darkest suspicions. But he wanted to talk about Belva. It was as though he could picture her right then in front of them.
You should see her ankles. Gorgeous, delicate ankles. Ankles like the ones on statues. We were engaged for 2 years.
He heaved a sigh.
She's dating some guy at the bank. Hasn't anything out of the ordinary happened to you?
Not that I know of, Henry said. Actually, he moaned this. Then he snapped his fingers.
No, wait. You want to know the most unusual thing that ever happened to me? One time last year, I went to the supermarket. Middle of the day, hardly anyone there. I'm going down the aisles, buying milk and soup and potatoes, and I remember I need bread. So I go to the bread aisle. There's loaves and loaves of bread sitting on the shelves at the far end of the aisle. I start pushing my cart toward the bread, and what do you think happens?
Edgar shrugged.
That's right, you don't know, he said, because it's not ordinary. What happens is, before I reach the end of the aisle, one of the loaves sort of unsquashes itself and falls to the floor. Nobody touched it. It just stretched itself out like an accordion, and there it went, plop. I picked up the loaf and put it back on the shelf. Then I push on over to the condiments. Now, here's the unordinary part. I'm heading to checkout, and I turn down the bread aisle again. And what do I hear from behind me?
He gave Edgar a significant look.
What?
Edgar signed, though he probably could have guessed.
Plop,
Henry said.
That's right. I turned around, and there was the very same loaf of bread lying on the floor.
What did you do?
I'm not an idiot. I bought it, of course. I put my regular brand back.
Was it better?
Same difference, Henry said, shrugging. I switched back the next week.
He took a long swallow of beer.
So there you have it. That's the peak, the apex, the apogee. That's the exotic life that Belva turned down.
That doesn't happen to everybody, Edgar wrote. Henry shrugged.
It'd be great to see a UFO, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Then the piano music began to skip, and Henry walked inside to fix the record. Babu went to the door and watched through the screen. Babu, it seemed, had come to some sort of decision about Henry. Edgar had been noticing it all night. When Henry was seated again, Babu stood next to him, eye to eye, and waited until Henry discovered that he needed to be scratched under the chin, or on the top of the head, or across his back, just in front of his tail. Even sober, Henry might not have been aware of how deftly Babu placed Henry's hand where he wanted to be scratched. Henry leaned his head back against the house and, after a time, fell asleep, mumbling. Edgar and the dogs were left looking into the summer night. The music reminded Edgar of New Year's Eve, so long past, when he had danced with his mother, how his father had cut in, how the two of them had swayed by the lights of the Christmas tree, how he'd stolen curds to give to these same dogs to celebrate. Back then, he'd hardly known them, he thought. Then the piano music ended, and Henry jerked awake.
"Now suppose I join the Navy," he said, vehemently replying to some argument in his dreams. "I sail off somewhere. Burma. After a while, I stop being ordinary. Okay. But how's Belva gonna know?"
"That's the problem. I have to stop being ordinary right here in Loot." He leaned forward and looked blearily at Edgar. Then he must have understood what had happened, because he stood and heaved a dramatic yawn.
"Okay," he said. "That's it. I'm done."
Edgar and the dogs followed Henry into the house. Henry might have been amused to find them sleeping on the porch one morning, but he didn't want to try the man's patience. When he came into the living room, the dogs had already curled up on the throw rug. He turned off the light on the end table and hung his arm off the sofa and laid a hand on Tinder. In the dark, he thought about the old man in the shed. He checked the blanket to make sure it wasn't wrapped around his legs. In all their days of running through the Shawamigan, he had never once forgotten to look down the legs of his pants for spiders. But his first night indoors, he'd been flummoxed by a blanket. Something had changed, he realized.
Settled there on the couch, he felt none of the previous night's trapped sensation. And he thought that part of him had decided to trust Henry, that this was a place they could sleep through the night in peace. Perhaps that had happened only a few minutes before. Perhaps when he was watching Babu. Then the counting part of his mind began its litany. 3 days in one place. Beginning of August. How much faster would they have to move once Tinder healed? How much longer could they stay? How far could they get before it turned cold? How far away could they get at all? Finally, Edgar eased himself off the sofa, nudging one of the dogs over, and he arranged himself amidst a chorus of sighs and groans so that he was touching them all. Please, he told himself, half warning, half prayer, don't get used to this. Engine number 6615. For 6 days, Edgar had been working in Henry's shed. Mornings he washed and dressed Tinder's foot. The bandages were no longer stained from weeping, but if Edgar worked too hard at cleaning the wound, the wash water turned pink. Despite Edgar's attempts to keep Tinder in quiet downstays, whenever Essay and Babu wrestled in the yard, Tinder hobbled along, his foot clubbed by a graying sock. Sometimes he yelped and rolled, but he quickly hopped up again. Evenings they listened to scratchy library records Henry brought home, music composed by Russian generals, Tchaikovsky, Rimsky-Korsakov, Shostakovich. During dinner, Henry swore at the crossword while Edgar read the liner notes. Afterward, Edgar tended to Tinder's foot and taught Henry sign. Henry had departed on Saturday, mid-morning, with a list of errands to run. He expected to return by early afternoon, he said, though with his luck, it could be evening and the day would be shot. After he left, Edgar stood in the shed deciding what to tackle first. The walls had been stripped of rusted tools and saw blades. The disintegrating wagon was half excavated. As Edgar wrestled with an oval wall mirror, miraculously unbroken, he felt the tingle of evaporating sweat on his neck. The sign that the old farmer had appeared in the shed's farthest recesses. "That mirror, that's one I hate to let go," he said. "That was my daughter's the whole time she was growing up. Probably seen her more than me. Everything from a baby up to 20 years old. Sometimes I wonder if all that might still be inside it. Gotta make an impression on the thing, reflecting the same person every day." Edgar swiped a rag along the glass and peered in. The mirror's surface was dusty, and the silver had been eaten away in islands of black. He waited for ghostly afterimages to form. A baby in its mother's arms, a girl brushing her hair, a young woman twirling blithely in a prom dress. But all he saw was his own reflection leaning up toward him. "There's no one there," he replied.